Yeah, I know the big brother's watching me. But at least he can't read my mind while I'm wearing my tinfoil hat. Ha!
Right-wingers need love too. We all need love. Indeed we do. Now you don't have to love my right-wing point of view. But right-wingers need love too. One more time, here we go. Right-wingers need love too. We all need love, indeed we do. Now you don't have to love my right-wing point of view. But right-wingers need love, right-wingers need love, right-wingers need love too.
Lonesome Al Barger is Orwell Redenbacher. Friends, Romans, Kentuckians, lend your ears to my jive. Also, tinfoil hat-wearing paranoid nut jobs, country freak jobs, all you liberated four-legged critters from the animal farm, and popcorn lovers everywhere. Howdy, neighbors. I'm your howling mad right-wing nut job, Lonesome Al Barger, and I'm crazier than the proverbial poopy house rat. Here this day of our Lord, July the 13th, the 2015. Lonesome Al is here to tell you that Orwell Redenbacher is punk rock. So it seems like I'm all the time scrapping with left-wing, pinko, progressive types on the electronic internet web. Partly that probably comes just from being old feudin' moonshine and Kentuckian stock. Partly that comes from being a patriotic American who truly, in fact, believes in American exceptionalism and does not at all appreciate the constant besmirching of the United States. Most especially by ingrate citizens who presume to enjoy our milk and honey as a right, but don't appreciate or respect the culture or the people who provide it. Because when you're running down our country hoss, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Most of all, perhaps I get fed up to the point of disgust and ready to rip into some commie fool's hide for dishonesty, most often accomplished by stupid perversions of the English language. Bad politics are most often hidden behind poor writing and horrible inversions of language. It's much harder to argue for bad policy and philosophy using simple words, clear language, and good grammar. Doesn't leave you much room to hide. Perhaps the person who has best made this kind of observation at length and in detail is George Orwell. More than his warnings of totalitarian dystopias, it was his underlying observation and analysis of the relation of bad politics and the bad use of language that have made him one of my top literary heroes. Thus, I am constantly invoking him in my political arguments, especially his instructive 1946 essay on politics and the English language. This has specifically gotten me mocked on Facebook recently by my friend Jamie Montgomery and his buddy Josh Warren. Jamie dismissed me as one of the, quote, simpletons of the right, and Josh described me as Orwell Redenbacher. Brother Montgomery found that laughing out loud funny, though I have not been able to get either one of them to elaborate their precise meaning. The point would seem to be that I'm a dumb country simpleton with pretensions of intellectualism. I reckon I'll own that. But anyway, they clearly meant the moniker as an insult. But I am, of course, entirely delighted to be compared in any way to my hero Orwell. Also, I like playing the hillbilly from, in fact, literally back here in the turnip patch. Thus, I am glad to also be compared to my fellow Hoosier country boy, the popcorn king Orwell Redenbacher. I am, therefore, happy to adopt the alter ego or simple nickname of Orwell Redenbacher. To that end, you can see my Orwell Redenbacher costume layout in the Fashion Up Al section at morethings.com. I'm pretty much like good old Orville Redenbacher, except that he was kind of crazy and paranoid. As you can see, I avoid this by wearing a simple and sensible tinfoil hat, which keeps the government from reading my thoughts or planting crazy notions in my head. It's my thinking cap.
The corn sure popping now.
That all established, let me elucidate on the original argument with Brother Montgomery that brought all this on. Nominally, but not really, centered on issues revolving around the debates over gay marriage. I want to address his arguments at some length more than they would merit on any proper intellectual basis. I will do so not because they are meritorious or clever, but really because they are common, mindless, left-wing drivel. They are perfect reflections of the so-called thinking of millions of schmucks incapable of any political discussion beyond reciting the dogmas of their cult of progressive religious zealotry. Two legs bad, four legs good. Jamie seems like a nice enough fella, but his political speech consists nearly entirely of utterly common left-wing inversions of the actual meanings of words and squid-like squirtings of random ink to cloud any waters of rational thinking. I find it pretty much impossible to get any more substantive thinking or consideration than ignorant John Stewart-like mockery or snide remarks from him, as if such pettiness constituted legitimate political debate. So, let me address Brother Montgomery specifically as a representative of liberal progressive theological orthodoxy. Repeatedly during recent arguments around gay marriage, he has expressed the glad desire to see enemies crushed under the jackboots of love. Basically, he wants to send anyone who simply does not personally approve or wish to participate in gay wedding ceremonies to South Park's death camp of tolerance. They are to be shut down by any means necessary. By threats and intimidation, courts and lawsuits, by ridicule, mockery, by shunning. Back during the debate a few months ago of our Indiana Religious Freedom Restoration Act law, the RFRA, RFRA law, Brother Montgomery was, of course, against religious freedom. Progressive Sharia will tolerate no dissidents or other religions. Thus, he was delighted when it looked like the little Hoosier Mom and Pop Memories pizza shop was going to be shut down under threats of violence and arson after some jackass local TV reporter came out and baited the nice Christian lady into saying that, well, she wouldn't want to cater a gay wedding. This was even though she noted that no one had asked her for such service, nor would she refuse to serve a gay customer or people of other religions in her restaurant. As a concluding aside on that little subplot, a radio host set up a crowdfunding source that raised most of $1 million for Memories Pizza, including $5 from old Lonesome Al, I'm proud to say. All's well that ends well there. On June the 25th of 2015, however, Brother Montgomery posted a little two-minute hate crowing over a story headlined, Restaurant That Refused Gay Weddings Closing for Lack of Business. Jamie responded with a totalitarian sentiment couched in pseudo-spiritual language, quote, the people who choose to stand for hate will lose out, and we will continue to move toward a higher cultural consciousness. Fills me with hope for us humans that we will not accept ignorance and hatred anymore, whether it is cloaked in so-called religion or not, end quote. I responded to this by saying, quote, Jamie, you are the one standing for hatred and intolerance here. You are the one not willing to accept any deviation from your chosen beliefs. Anyone not willing to actively participate as you see mandatory is to be shunned and run out of business. You celebrate this and then you call that love or tolerance. This is positively Orwellian of you, end Al quote. And that, led directly to Josh Warren coining my new moniker when he said, quote, "That's right. You are intolerant of intolerance. You think nobody should care what other people think or feel if it doesn't affect them. Orwell Redenbacher would be proud." End quote. Jamie responded, "Orwell Redenbacher, LOL. The simpletons on the ride. It gets frustrating." Now, at this point, I'll break out from the Facebook narrative to respond more fully and properly than you can do within the stunted confines of arguing philosophy in blog post comment threads. Being a simpleton from Cornfield County, I may be somewhat inadequate to the response. Shoot, I'm just a country boy. But I guess I'll give it my best shot. Let me bring in then George Orwell, the smart dude whose spirit hovers above our little confederacy of dunces here. He begins his Politics in the English Language essay with five specific examples of bad writing that he works against. A second one concerns exactly this word, tolerate, at the center of my objections. A Professor Lancelot Hogben wrote, quote, "Above all, we cannot play ducks and drakes with a native battery of idioms which prescribes egregious collocations of vocables as the basic put up with for tolerate." End quote. You can't be using the phrase put up with to mean tolerate. First of all, if my name was Lancelot Hogben, I don't think I would speak in quite so haughty a tone. Second, and much more importantly, this quote itself shows exactly and precisely where this old professor and my modern Facebook buddies are absolutely wrong and perverted in their thinking. The word tolerate actually does mean, pretty precisely, to put up with. Tolerance means putting up with things you don't like. I willingly put up with modern so-called country music, ignorant kids wearing their pants hanging off their asses for the prison chic look, and even people worshiping the child-molesting prophet Muhammad. You may be certain, however, that Lonesome Al himself will not endorse or personally participate in any of this foolishness. In return, I demand simply that people tolerate me wearing a shirt and tie while listening to Merle Haggard and Tom T. Hall as I draw rude caricatures of the false idol of Islam. You tolerate me, and I'll likewise put up with you. Thus we all go about our business, peaceably swirling around one another in the American melting pot. God bless America. Monsieurs Montgomery and Warren, however, are not willing to put up with, that is, to tolerate, any personal non-participation or dissident thought opposed to their progressive agenda. It is not enough that a banker, photographer, or anyone else simply put up with gay people getting married. They absolutely must personally approve and participate as required, or else they are to be crushed by any means necessary. You must love Big Brother, because, after all, Big Brother is love. Or, as Jamie Montgomery made the point about love in the next comment after establishing that I'm a simpleton, quote, "The conservative are genuinely baffled and feel victimized that they are not loved and accepted for not loving and not accepting. They are hypersensitive about their freedom and privilege, but they take no account of impact on others. It is like they can't see beyond the horizon of self, yet think they are beholding the entirety of things. This bondage in self is perhaps the root cause of their confusion and inability to acknowledge the existence and necessity of transcendence." End quote. Right. Now, this brings me back to the smart Orwell. Politics in the English language is about how bad writing, just like Brother Montgomery's nonsense about transcendence, not only reflects and allows, but indeed helps to generate the bad politics. Quoting George Orwell, "A scrupulous writer in every sentence that he writes will ask himself at least four questions. Thus, one, what am I trying to say? Two, what words will express it? Three, what image or idiom will make it clearer? Four, is this image fresh enough to have an effect?" And he will probably ask himself two more. Could I put it more shortly? And have I said anything that is avoidably ugly? But you are not obliged to go to all this trouble. You can shirk it by simply throwing your mind open and letting the ready-made phrases come crowding in. They will construct your sentences for you, even think your thoughts for you to a certain extent, and at need they will perform the important service of partially concealing your meaning even from yourself. It is at this point that the special connection between politics and the debasement of language becomes clear." End quote. Keep that Orwell quote in mind as I again recite Brother Montgomery and hear how the ready-made phrases are in Orwell's words, tacked together like the sections of a prefabricated hen house, doing his thinking for him and concealing even from himself his own meaning when Jamie says of simpletons on the right that, quote, "They are hypersensitive about their freedom and privilege, but they take no account of impact on others. It is like they can't see beyond the horizon of self, yet think they are beholding the entirety of things. This bondage in self is perhaps the root cause of their confusion and inability to acknowledge the existence and necessity of transcendence." End quote. Did Jamie Montgomery have any idea at all of what he was actually saying there? Again, the whole point of the original Facebook post was simply that he was celebrating or gloating that a bakery was run out of business for refusing to cater a gay wedding. Thus, the bakers are confused by their bondage in the horizon of self into thinking that they can deny the existence and necessity of transcendence. Take apart the hen house and strip away the goo of Jamie's self-proclaimed, quote, higher cultural consciousness. What does the existence and necessity of transcendence actually mean? In the context, he's saying that these bakers just don't get that they must abandon their Christian God and adopt the higher cultural consciousness of Jamie Montgomery's religion of progressive transcendence on pain of having their business, reputation, and livelihood destroyed. You shall have no other gods before me. You will love Big Brother. But you can kind of tell how he lets those gooey prefab phrases gloss over and conceal, even from himself, the actual meaning of what he is saying. And dear hearts, that right there is exactly how a nice fellow who truly thinks that he believes in peace and freedom and love ends up supporting jackbooted thuggery and utter intolerance. Again, I'm basing all this analysis on one June 25th, 2015 post on Jamie Montgomery's Facebook page because I want to be real specific and precise. You can apply how the tone of this reflects the discussions you have in your own online discussions or real-life interactions or in all of Jamie Montgomery's other posts, if you care. One more important point to make from this post, which, like everything else I've said here, applies to a broad cross-section of the thinking and presentation and mentality of Jamie Montgomery and millions of others like him. That point is that progressive politics is a religion. I don't even mean that metaphorically, but more or less literally. Look at the language in Montgomery's post about moving toward a higher social consciousness. Consider again his admonition about acknowledging the existence and necessity of transcendence. Those terms are theological and spiritual, not political. That is religious and theological talk, not an expression about politics and public policy. While I'm still in Orwell mode, let me take one more sidetrack to say just a few words about the concurrent ongoing firestorm about the Confederate flag. First off, shame and more shame on the flag banners for exploiting the terrible church slaughter in South Carolina for this cheap political gain. And shame on the public for biting on it. This coordinated attack on the Confederate flag has been compared aptly to the Taliban and ISIS types destroying age-old artifacts and works of art that they do not configure to their interpretation of the will of the prophet. Likewise, progressives will happily ban symbols or artifacts that do not pass their ideological muster. To say it differently, following the Orwell logic and language, progressives are shoving the Confederate flag down the memory hole. In 1984, whenever Big Brother decided to change the official content of past history, people would throw artifacts that didn't go with the new narrative down a literal hole to be destroyed and wiped from memory. That's what progressives intend to do with the Confederate flag. The Ministry of Truth tells us officially that the Northern-dominated legitimate U.S. government wanted to do away with slavery, but that the South committed treason by seceding from the Union in order to preserve their ability to keep slaves. The Civil War was thus about freeing the slaves. By extension, any display now of Confederate artifacts basically means that you hate black people. Of course, this narrative simply does not fit with known facts, historic and modern. For just one little hint, Lincoln only came up with the Emancipation Proclamation in order to put on a veneer of moral righteousness already halfway through the war. This explains how utterly frivolous and silly stuff as TV Land canceling broadcast of the Dukes of Hazzard because their General Lee car had a Confederate flag on it. You're really going after a silly 30-year-old sitcom? Well, yeah, because the whole show is significant counter-evidence to the official version of history. The Dukes never, in 7 seasons, so much as looked sideways at a black person. They were not in any significant way hateful or belligerent. Like 4 million of other Southerners, it was a symbol of pride and heritage and nothing to do with hating black people. This silly little TV show undermines the proper progressive narrative, undermines the teachings of the church. It is a heresy that cannot be allowed to continue corrupting the minds of the youth like Socrates. Again, the Civil War and all Southern symbols have always been about slavery and hating black people. Also, Oceania has always been at war with Eurasia. It would be double plus ungood to say, or even nay especially, to think otherwise. The Ministry of Truth has spoken officially on behalf of the Proletariat Committee for Transcendence to Higher Cultural Consciousness. I probably should finish up here with a few conciliatory words to Jamie, because that's the proper neighborly Christian American thing to do. Also, it's not nice to be unkind to the mentally challenged. Brother Montgomery, you seem like a nice enough fellow, misguided and uneducated though you may be, but I bet if we got the chance to actually sit down in a bar together, we'd have a few drinks and have a big old time, arguing, pounding the table. I would just admonish you to pay closer attention to the implications of your thinking. I can't believe that you would be so cold and hateful to the bakers and pizza shop owners if you actually knew them and they were not just media abstractions, toys to be posed and disposed of in childhood play. You should play nice. Those are living creatures that you're hating on, not just Ken and Barbie dolls made of plastic. So finally, I come to the gratitude corner today with a particularly full plate. I am grateful for George Orwell. His writings have been invaluable to me for long decades, both for the political and philosophical insight, but most especially for enlightenment about the nature and use of language. He has been far and away my best writing coach. It is primarily because of Orwell, H.L. Mencken, and Ayn Rand that I write and think clearly. It is because of their influences that I can claim that, like Boyd Crowder, I have been accused of many things, but that being inarticulate is not one of them. I am particularly grateful to be able to honestly make that claim. I am also most grateful to Jamie Montgomery and all those silly children in his little Facebook clique. They have been useful inspiration to clarify and explain my own thinking with some precision. First of all, to myself. I appreciate being driven to improve my own clarity of thought. Thank you. I am grateful to all for proper correction. If any of you readers or listeners hear me contradicting myself, or you hear me double talking or new speaking, or above all, if you hear me saying things that are actually, factually wrong, I will be forever grateful if you'd tell me. Let lonesome Reverend Brother Al Barger know if I've got a big booger hanging out of my nose. Please spell it out in writing. I'm thankful for useful criticism and correction. Above all, I am grateful for the blessings of liberty and love. It was my special privilege to celebrate the recent 4th of July holiday by performing a wedding at Roberts Park in Connersville, Indiana.
Good afternoon, friends, family, neighbors. I'm Albert Barger, and we're here to formalize through marriage vows the marriage of Frederick Day and Stephen Evans. They've been together now in a state of commitment for some 17 years, and this consecrates their union truly. More than any words that I can say to you today as a preacher, more than anything that a church can say, more than anything that a government's got to say under their authority. So today we're simply here to formalize a union that has already been consecrated in love for a long time. All right then, I'm going to take just a quick moment to go off the reservation, take a moment of personal privilege as a preacher, tell a quick story on Brother Steve. Now, it's not anything much, it's just a little quick thing, doesn't mean hardly anything, except that I've found over the years that a lot of times it's little quiet things that tell you more about a person or a relationship than some big moment of drama or something, speech at some banquet hall. So, maybe 3 years ago or so at work, me and Steve's out the sidewalk taking a break, and, well, he was maybe just the least bit aggravated with his beloved. And he says, and so I told Fred he could just go to the drugstore and pick up his own damn prescription. And that struck me awful cute. So I figured I'd tease him a little bit. I said, oh, Steve, is there trouble in paradise?
A little bit.
And he was kind of taken aback. And he changed his tone right away and he lowered his voice. And he kind of hung his head a little bit, actually. Said, no, Fred just gets a little cranky when his allergies are acting up. And that was just the tenderest thing to see Steve getting all remorseful and repentant over having been just that teensiest bit sarcastic about his Fred. And, well, that spoke volumes to me about his feelings, about the nature of their relationship. So that's all there was to that story. So then, Fred, seeing that he feels this way about you, I say it's long since time you made an honest man of him.
Yeah.
Let's do this. Fred, repeat these words of commitment after me. Steve, I'll love you forever.
Steve, I love you forever.
I'll be your faithful partner.
I'll be your faithful partner.
And stand by your side for the rest of my life.
And stand by your side for the rest of my life.
Now, Steve, say your words of commitment after me. Fred, I'll love you forever.
Fred, I'll love you forever.
I'll be your faithful partner.
I'll be your faithful partner.
And stand by your side for the rest of my life.
And stand by your side for the rest of my life.
Brothers and sisters, that was a special moment for me of a consciousness of higher things. At least a moment of transcendence above dirty, petty mammalian human politics into the higher experience of the eternal sacred light of love. Beyond that, I honor my mother for giving me life. Lastly, I thank you all for investing an hour of your life consciousness and to listen to what I've got to say. Hopefully I've been at least somewhat entertaining. Beyond that, I pray that my humble shucking and jiving mic cast may be just a little candle of light under your pathway. This would be my greatest aspiration as any bit of a public figure or as a private friend. May God and Ayn Rand bless you all. Amen.